This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Them ropes, Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino. No sponsor this week because it's a holiday week, so you know we can say all the terrible things that have been on our mind.
Finally, I can be real with the people. I feel like I have been holding back for so long. I feel like I'm unchained and I'm hitting the ground running.
Weird sense of ennui from me on Thanksgiving night, Chris, because
that's tryptophan.
I didn't have turkey. I had hot dogs for Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh my God. Now I understand the ennui. I'm sad. I now have this ennui.
No,
is
no,
it contagious?
No, it has to
hot
do with
hot dog Thanksgiving.
Well, here's why. And it had nothing. It was more situational than anything. The Thursday night football game, which is more or less a recent innovation. I think it's only been around like 15 years, I think.
I think that's right, yeah.
The third game on Thanksgiving, which I believe the first one was Cardinals-Bengals because they weren't sure if they were going to get ratings, which tells you all you need to know about.
Cincinnati still has a football team.
More or less.
Interesting. Cool.
But it was canceled because of COVID, because it was going to be the Steelers and the Ravens. And the Ravens have had an outbreak of a positive COVID test to the point where even the game being rescheduled, the Sunday is not going to work. It's now going to be on Tuesday.
I'll tell you, too, with football, just the way the game is played. You know, once the dam breaks, it's kind of like the Titanic.
You're in close quarters, especially if you're on the line or in a formation and in a training room and in rooms watching tape all the time. Yeah.
The locker room, those guys, I guess, would have to get padded up and everything in a separate or not play at all. But then you have to go and sterilize the whole locker. It's just really complicated once the dam breaks. And they're not really doing a bubble, are they?
They're trying, but you know, they're like some player will go home and they'll get it. And then they just come back to the facility and it doesn't matter what kind of lockdown you have. If one person gets it, that's going to spread quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Thursday night in my early teens and a little earlier even, I'd say till, you know, when I first started watching wrestling, you know, up until I'd say the middle of college, Thanksgiving night was a big wrestling night. And I'm going to plug, you may have to scroll a bit for it, but Dave Meltzer's history of wrestling on Thanksgiving night that he reposts every year is fantastic. And I was just like, I'm sitting there with nothing to watch. And I'm just like, okay, you know, should I put on a Starcade from a Thanksgiving night? Should I put on a Survivor Series for a Thanksgiving night? So I actually watched something I had never watched before. I watched the 1992 Smoky Mountain Wrestling Thanksgiving Thunder, which was, you know, it's a one-match show, pretty much. The main event, a Knoxville street fight. But it was a street fight between the Rock and Roll Express and the Heavenly Bodies, the Tom Pritchard, Stan Lane version of the Heavenly Bodies. And it was a lot of fun, and I had never seen it before. But it's one of those things where it's like, wow, it feels like the old days right now with no football on a Thursday night. I really, I kind of dug it, to be honest with you.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because obviously we're going to talk about our ice cold Survivor Series takes here. And part of the reason why Survivor Series is such an ice cold show, and like that's my top line take on, you know, the 30 years of Undertaker and everything, is what you are seeing here is the weird like death of Survivor Series in a way, because like it's not even happening on Thanksgiving. It's happening before Thanksgiving. The Undertaker, who debuted at Survivor Series, is retiring. The matches are no longer any sort of stakes. You know, you and I have reduced it down to what we call laundry wars. Like everything about the show is divorced from the Thanksgiving component.
Even
just
the 5-on-5 doesn't matter anymore because it used to be a special thing to see, oh man, name guys versus name guys. Because all you'd get is like 2 hours a week of squash matches. So and a TV main event. So even this, you know, and this is of course one of the quote unquote big four. It was, I think, the last of the four. No, I think Royal Rumble was the last of the four, but it's moved up in stakes. But it used to be you'd have 4 pay-per-views a year, and Survivor Series was one of them, and was a special deal to see these types of, you know, it's basically tag team war games type of thing going on with Survivor Series. And now it's just, you know, since you see good matches every week, it's reduced the need for Survivor Series.
Yeah, I mean, that is part of it, too, is like, you know, you watch SmackDown this week, Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan, that level of work, you just wouldn't have gotten that.
No.
On older television, on, like, mid-build, like, nowhere, like, that level of work that was in that match just simply would have been in, quote-unquote, the good old days weekly television. What it would have been is, like, Mr. Perfect, unless he was involved in an angle at that time, on a series of squash matches every week, because he's on the Survivor Series team. We need to make sure Perfect looks strong, and he's just going to go out there and he's going to squash everybody for the next 4 weeks until we get to Survivor Series, and then maybe we'll have something for him after that. You know, there's a lot of like holding pattern style booking in the old style, but that built up the big shows. And the other thing that I'm sort of trying to illustrate here is that, like, I think it gets to the bigger issue of wrestling getting decoupled from American culture, and that tracking with a decline in ratings and just the, you know, the way people engage with the modern product. When people think about wrestling, they still go back to the old tropes from the 90s and the 80s, Ric Flair's and the Macho Man, Randy Savage's and that sort of thing. And that's in an era where wrestling was more part of like the rhythm of American life. We were watching more TV too, and that's part of what's changing it. But like, I do think something is linked to the loss of like wrestling on Thanksgiving. WWE not having like halftime heat, which like even if you didn't think that halftime heat match was very good, the fact that you had something WWF related linked to the biggest television event of the year. I think, didn't Halftime Heat, that one with Mankind and The Rock, didn't that do pretty good ratings?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, stuff like that gets wrestling linked to American life. And then the transition is people then watch the product, and they want to see what these people are up to.
Yeah, they tried that a couple years ago with NXT. They had almost a Survivor Series type of match. Multi-person tag match on NXT. I think that it was on the network. I can't remember if it was on the network or on USA. I think it was on the network where you had to go to the WWE.
It's weird because like NXT, especially in that era, is like the really good indie rock of professional wrestling. And
it was
so
a pretty
like,
good match. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's like really good indie rock is not what you expect to see at the Super Bowl halftime show, right? Like you expect to see Big Pop. Creed, maybe. You too. Creed, if you lived 20 years
people.
Ago. Up with people. I have timely references, Jeff.
I don't. No, yeah. But the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake one. Yeah, you know, I agree with everything you said there. There's nothing I can add to it. So I'll go into the news. Speaking of nostalgia in a way, Bob Ryder passed away, longtime TNA employee. From my fandom, I was on Prodigy in the early 90s, and he was the guy, he was the moderator of the wrestling section there, also famous for a wrestling topic called Wrestling with Smarts, with one Dave Lagana, who used to be with the NWA, and how I met those guys, but Bob and I had a lot of interaction on Prodigy. We had a lot of interaction on Rec Sport Pro Wrestling back in the early 90s, and he took his kind of presence on there and started helping out with Dave Shearer's Wrestling Lariat newsletter at the time, got in good with ECW, and then eventually formed a website called OneWrestling.com, which was a progenitor with, I believe, Raja and SE Scoops and 411 in the early aughts and late 90s as a news site, what we'd call clickbait these days, but it was, you know, a news aggregator at the time. Bob also one of the forefathers of wrestling podcasting, and that's another reason to pay respect. He was one of the guys who had that WCW Live audio show, him and Chad Damiani, who I've become friends with since he's moved out here and started going in improv circles. But you know, he had an audio show on the WCW website, the very early version, I believe, maybe even on CompuServe. I'm not positive on that one. Or maybe it was through Prodigy. But passing away of cancer at the age of 64, just a force in internet wrestling. And neither, you know, all these podcasts, if they're not at least tipping the cap, they should, because we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Bob Ryder, to be honest with you.
It was all I could do, and a real testament to my respect for Bob Ryder, that I didn't start making dial-up noises the second you said Prodigy, because it required a tremendous amount of self-control for me to not go, squee-woo, oh, as you were doing that whole in memory.
I could tell you stories of my mother yelling at me when she tried to pick up the phone and she heard me online. Could you get off the effing computer? She would never cuss, but
I liked the old school AOL scam. They'd give you the free disc and you'd put it into your CD-ROM drive, and it would allow you to install AOL, but you'd get on and you'd get quote-unquote free hours of the internet, but you'd spend endless amounts of time downloading all the graphics for every single web page. So by the end of your free trial, you'd maybe seen three pages of the internet.
Shout out to the 2400 baud modem. Other news. Xavier Woods has been officially announced as a host for the resurrected G4 network, which is coming back. And this is interesting because it's not Austin Creed. It's Xavier Woods.
Oh, which, I thought it was as Austin Creed.
It was originally Austin Creed when he was campaigning for the hosting gig. And now it was announced as, I believe he was announced as Austin, quote unquote, Xavier Woods Creed, or he was just announced as Xavier Woods. But this to me is fascinating because, look, I'm no lawyer, but I've played one on TV. It's this, if I am one of these female talents from Twitch, there's at least the possibility of a lawsuit here. At the least it's favoritism, which isn't a lawsuit worthy, but if you wanted to extend it to equal protection, there's a possibility of that, I think.
I think so. I would want to know the nature of the conversation that the New Day guys had with Vince when all this stuff with Zelina Vega was going down. If you remember, like, when we were doing the news segment then, one of the reports is that the New Day guys went and met with Vince about Twitch streaming and all those sorts of things, and the impression we got was that they were doing it kind of on behalf of the talent. It might very well have been that Xavier Woods was fairly along in this deal and wanted to make sure that he protected his egg.
Well, yeah, and the flip side to that is when Up, Up, Down, Down started to really get traction.
And it has major traction, too. So, yeah. Like, I mean, to make it clear, I get why Woods was thinking much bigger than WWE at this point.
Well, they originally wanted to shut it down, if I recall correctly. And then eventually the network picked it up as part of their product that they'd put on the network. along with the New Day's podcast and whatnot. I think the New Day has an exception in their contracts or something, because they are, for lack of a better term, they're made guys and they're not made guys. And the New Day has proven themselves to be a cash cow, so they get the special, you know, they get the special treatment as opposed to, say, a Long Island Ice Z YouTube channel by by Zack Ryder, who's no longer with the company. You know, I think there are rules for some people and not rules for others. Let's put it that way.
No, I think that's a reasonable read on the situation as well. But
I'm going to be interested to see if Xavier actually, I don't know how far reaching the G4 network will be, or if it's just going to be a YouTube channel, or if it's going to be on terrestrial cable as it once was. So depending on the money, I mean, Xavier Woods is not he's young compared to me, but he's not young in wrestling per se. And the bump card has some punches in it. I would be very interested to see if this was a way out for Xavier Woods as well.
Well, yeah, I've always viewed the building out of the gaming brand over the last, 5 years here to be step two in what Xavier Woods views as his career, which is, get it right down to delaying some of the WWE stuff earlier on in his career to finish up his doctorate. The guy has always had a longer term sense of what his career path is. And it's one of the things I really admire about him. And he's thinking about, how many more New Day versus the Street Profit matches can there be? It's not hard to realize, given the way WWE's booking patterns are in the modern era, when you have more or less hit the ceiling of what is going to be done with you in WWE world. And the New Day has hit that. So long as they're selling merch, it makes sense for them to be still there. But, if they are not selling merch, or if now they can go and do G4 stuff. If you could make the exact same money and not fall on your head occasionally, you're going to do that.
Yeah, which, you know, it's very interesting.
If you could make 80% of the same money and not have to take a steel chair shot occasionally, you're probably going to do that.
Yeah, Exhibit B is Sasha Banks changing her Twitter profile to be Mercedes Vernado based on the fame she's getting now from The Mandalorian, which I'm sure, you know, even if this run is about keeping Sasha happy, now she has leverage, because she has a bigger fan base now than she ever did.
The one thing that gave Vince leverage over Brock is that Brock didn't like getting hit in the face, but his other job, UFC, made him more likely to get hit in the face, and he liked getting hit in the face there even less than his original job.
Yeah, well, but the money was better over there, too.
No, I know, but he hated getting hit in the face. What my point here, Jeff, is that
Are there people who like getting hit in the face? I guess for money.
Let me tell you about a man named Mick Foley.
That's true. I do getting hit, like, on football and stuff.
Even Big Van Vader. There are dudes who definitely, like, enjoy that, for sure. And we love them. But a lot of these people, have, let's say, an ambivalence towards it. They don't dislike taking the bumps, but they also aren't like sitting there and jonesing for it. Give me more.
Poetry, walks on the beach, getting hit in the face, turnoffs, mean people. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. No, most people. So my point here is that I think would you take a 25% pay cut to not take a steel chair to the back of the head again? I don't know. If you've taken enough steel chair shots to the head and you're starting to have some neck damage pile on, probably.
Very quietly, the WWE has settled a multitude of different lawsuits regarding securities fraud and insider trading related to Saudi Arabia, the Middle East TV deal, and the October 31st, 2019 Crown Jewel show, and the alleged hostage situation. Alleged. Well, yes. Credit to the Wrestling Observer for this text. The settlement was for $39 million. This was settled on 11/18, and it looks like insurance carriers will be the ones paying the bill. This is interesting because it kind of goes against most WWE legal mindset, which is to drag things out until plaintiffs relent and want to settle. And this is the largest settlement since the Owen Hart death lawsuit. I think the best take on this, again, credit to somebody else, was Todd Martin, an actual attorney who has not played one on television, who said basically that he thinks the reason that WWE settled was fear of discovery and what would come out of that. There's a lot about statements about a TV deal in the Middle East that may have been not true and deceptive, and other things about the entire hostage situation, who knew what and where.
A lot of liability issues there for sure.
Yeah, we talked about this. There was somebody who was on the plane at the time who was going to testify in court. That would have been interesting. It was either going to be one of Anderson and Gallows or FTR, according to rumors. So yeah, we talked about that on this show. Any other thoughts on this, Chris?
Well, I mean, you know, there's still kind of open questions about how the hell that Arya Davari Mansoor weird Saudi Arabia anti-Iranian propaganda scene thing happened at the first Saudi Arabia show. And I mean, like, cause I'm telling you this, Jeff, I don't believe that Vince McMahon sat back there and was like, we need to do with a Saudi Arabia Iran angle. Like, someone fed that to them. And yet, like, getting back to the discovery thing.
But that was the first crown jewel.
Was
that
the that wasn't the same one as
that
the
wasn't
hostage.
The same one. No, but on that
this
one,
this has
it
been
was
a
just,
very bad relationship.
They just wanted the cheap heat. That was all wrestling. That was.
I don't
them.
Know. I don't think that was purely wrestling. I don't think we're making Saudi Arabia's like national hero. We're doing the whole Saudi Arabia talent. I know. I think that was in conjunction with the Saudi government, because they also ran pro Saudi Arabian advertisements and stuff. Yeah.
I believe they may have floated. Yeah. I don't know. That was, whew. I remember that, and that was just, what are you doing?
this has been a horrible relationship. I'm like, do they have any more of these shows planned in the works here?
They're contracted to do shows. I believe they had a 20-year contract.
Yeah, that's right. It was like a really long time, right?
Yeah.
Vince
they didn't
has
do
be
one. They did
about
do one this
out.
November. They did one. I believe they did one earlier in the year. No, they haven't done a show since then. But
the WWE election special live from Saudi Arabia would have been one heck of a show.
Well, there's a weird thing about payment, and whether or not that I think that's the crux of the discovery thing too, is whether or not WWE was so mad about payment that they cut something, or there was some issue about, we haven't been paid yet, so we're not going to give you this. And that's why the whole hostage situation happened in the first place. Not a hostage situation, according to everybody else, but the people involved. But
the people stuck on the airplane felt like they weren't getting off of the airplane.
Let's put it this way. The people who got out don't think it was a hostage situation.
Well, yeah, and then there are the other people who didn't get
but
stuck
everybody
on the airplane.
Else does. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Billy Corgan's NWA announced a new weekly show on Tuesdays at 7 called NWA Showcase. The show will be taped at Thunder Studios out here in Los Angeles in conjunction with the weekly Tuesday night UWN shows, which are on pay-per-view. We will not be covering that. I believe our NWA coverage on Shake Them Ropes is pretty much dead, except for anything having to do with AEW, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I may keep an eye on it, and if the product heats up, would be something that might get back into the purview. The same way that, like, when AEW heated up sufficiently, like, we have a fairly low bar here on this show of what
just
heating
entertain
up.
Us. Just
yeah,
entertain
yeah,
like,
I mean, like, if you think about, like, AEW, I mean, we've done NXT UK, we've done NWA Power, if a product heats up, we'll talk about it. But, you know, also, like, NWA has had fits and starts. The talent share, getting back to this, the talent share relationship with AEW has been really smart, because, like, now, if NWA is going to have any hope with this relaunch of this new product, it's in no small part due to the generative relationship that they've had with AEW for the last several months here, and having guys like Ricky Starks and Eddie Kingston be key parts of AEW's product is good for NWA.
Legendary enhancement talent Dwayne Gill suffered a heart attack on 11/25. Keep him in your prayers. Fightful learned that Arturo Hua sustained an arm injury on last week's episode of NXT in his match with Kushida. Huas filmed some additional content for WWE Digital, but it didn't end up making the air. When they asked about their status on Raw, they were told that sidelining Raw Underground set the stage for his NXT return, and his NXT appearance was not scheduled to be a one-off, as there were creative plans for him moving forward in NXT. That's a shame. I love that guy.
No, I'm a big fan. I think it makes all the sense in the world that there are greater plans for him because of the promotional package. I mean, like, they gave him this tagline of total destruction. Like, you don't... Yes, we were joking about how, you know, total destruction, he loses his match against Kushida. But the clear indication there is that this guy is going to get important and meaningful wins here, you know, on the way to mid-card success.
Okay. Gosh, we've gone that long. that was a half hour preamble now into the actual wrestling. Ice Cold Survivor Series takes. I'll give mine and then I will give you the floor, Chris. This was a 50-50 show at best. Things I liked. I liked the New Day Street Profits match. It felt old school where they're working on Montez Ford's core. I liked watching the New Day work heel, even so slightly. I thought that was a nice little nostalgia piece right there. I liked but didn't love the Sasha Asuka match, and I liked but didn't love the main event. Everything else wasn't very good, I didn't think. And
but it was like predictably not good. It's like, yes, you knew that these matches weren't going to be great going into them. So, you know, like the five on fives are, they just are what they are.
Yeah. And the women's match, especially because that was the one that needed to make a star and it didn't on multiple fronts. And the logic in it was just so baffling to me because the one person who would have come out of that thing looking like, in terms of the actual results, the one person who should have come out of there looking better than she did was Peyton Royce, who pinned Bayley, the longest reigning SmackDown women's champion, clean as a sheet with her finisher. And then like 30 seconds later was eliminated by Natty of all people. And if we get into main roster talk, the need to protect Natty is baffling to me.
Yes.
I don't understand it at all, but they continue to do it to give her credence in the SmackDown women's division.
She's a fixed price asset, though. Like, she yes. is what she is. Wins and losses make no difference. If you needed to heat her up, you could, but like, you can't feed her enough losses. I mean, you could for a year and a half and make her like a punchline. But
they
like,
never heat her up to the point where she's right. having a 20-minute classic with Bayley or Sasha. They heat her up so that she can do her three moves, and that's it. That's
yeah,
the weird that,
that's
thing.
What I'm saying. Yeah, at this point, she's a fixed price. Like they're not trying to build her. She's not trying to be built. Like, she is what she is, what she is. We know what she is. I didn't... The Peyton Royce thing is baffling. Shayna Baszler in this tag
yes.
team with Nia Jax.
I was going to get into that.
Yeah, go ahead then.
Here's the weird thing. Is because people were on me about my take that nobody was built from that match because Lana, whose entire gimmick is she sucks.
Oh,
that's
come
her gimmick.
On. She's a punchline. She is the Leon Ruff of the main roster's women division. Actually,
Leon's
no, I'm sorry. No, that's not fair. That's not fair to Leon Ruff
that's
because
not
Leon,
fair to Leon Ruff.
No, because yeah. Leon Ruff has a lot more credibility than she ever will.
Shayna continues her baffling main roster gimmick of not understanding the rules of professional wrestling. She's DQ'd like a dope. I did kind of like the Ruby Riott pin spot of being knocked out because that's how Shayna's always pinned is Karafuna clutch, rollover 1-2-3. But she's DQ'd like a dope on the 5 count. And then Bianca and Nia have this weirdly staged double count out because God knows we need to protect Nia Jax and not make Bianca into the sole survivor, which she should have been here. Bianca Belair is money. She's a face of the division. She's next generation of the horsewomen in terms of evolution. Why not make her the star here? Instead, we have to play out the string of this stupid Lana storyline, which we then don't really follow up on Raw because we now have her in a tag team protected by Asuka. And it's just, we know they're going to be the tag team champions, and eventually Lana's probably going to turn on Asuka. But nobody was helped by any of this. Lana's sitting there crying on a stairway instead of showing actual...
I'm legitimately more worried that Lana is going to beat Asuka clean.
She is a WWE superstar now, in canon. In the story, she is a competent wrestler. But her gimmick is she sucks.
She doesn't ever have competent wrestling matches either.
Right.
In reality, she doesn't. I'm sure she's probably a very nice person, but she's not even a mid-level wrestler. She's not. She's just not.
And the gimmick is she's bad at her job. And if
she was a great manager too.
Yes.
So what you are seeing here with Lana, to be 100% clear, lest people think that I just hate this person and have it in for her. What you are seeing is a person criminally miscast in a role. When she could be slotted into a role in wrestling that's actually out by the ring, that is a very good role for her that she would excel at. She is the baseball player who is a natural first baseman being asked to be shortstop. And yeah, they're failing all the time because they can't move. But if you put them at first base where they belong, it wouldn't be a problem.
The scrappy underdog story based on losses was done really well once in the women's division. And that was Bayley in NXT when she was getting beat by everybody. And then she goes, I'm sick of this. I want to be champion. And on her run, beats Becky, beats Charlotte, and then beats Sasha at NXT Brooklyn. Lana being the scrappy underdog doesn't work because the fans are never going to get behind her talent. They may get behind her story if fans ever come back, but we're never going to know how this story is really working. But I somehow doubt it.
But
in today's day and age,
people don't get behind the scrappy underdog unless the scrappy underdog has really well-worked, hard-working spots that make us believe that this person, the underdog, is a damn good wrestler, and they're just not getting their fair shake. That there's like a systemic injustice against the scrappy underdog who's a hard-working person who's good and competent. Lana never exhibits hard-working, good competence. She goes through tables.
Yeah, she went through 9 tables.
Yeah, that is not the same as Rey Mysterio doing like breathtaking high flying moves in 1996, and then just coming up short against the larger, less athletic schlub of a guy who's just using the fact that he's a bulky dude who is born bulky and isn't really working, is just basically using their size to like club the person down. Lana is not flying through the air around Nia Jax, and then Nia Jax is like falling on her. Lana is just getting beaten up.
Yeah, and my only other real note is that Undertaker 30th anniversary retirement ceremony. I hate the way WWE does retirements in this fashion.
These people meant nothing to him at a certain point. Like the Big Show coming out to applaud Mark, like why?
Well, they never explain it. They alluded to it when The Godfather came out about the backstage crew.
Sure.
BSK. But to me, at least, even with the Ric Flair part, when Ric Flair did this in Orlando on the Raw afterwards, everybody, it's the criticism we have of the Hardys in WWE. They never get to evolve into anything other than they were when they were 20. Everybody here has to be in the character they're most known for. Nobody ever says anything legitimately heartfelt. You have the Godwins out there in their freaking overalls. You have Kane coming out in his mask.
I like the Godwins coming out, because what's funny to me about that is that the Godwins were not the Godwins when they were really in the picture with the Undertaker. They were part of the Ministry of Darkness. And like, if anything, if you're going to
Midian was one of them, I believe, hurt at the time.
That's a good point. So it's just,
do you want Midian coming out naked for the retirement ceremony?
I
mean,
naked Midian. I want the weird, the scuzzy looking Midian. I was a big fan of Scuzzy Dennis Knight.
And he had the best theme song, I think, of anybody in the division. But you know what I'm saying, though? It's one of those things, like, we can never get past high school wearing our varsity jackets at the time. We have to be out there. And then the Undertaker doesn't really say anything terribly heartfelt. It's all in character. We know where they're waiting for the Hall of Fame speech, but at the same time, it's one of the problems with WWE in general, for me personally, is there's never... You can never make the emotional connection because everything is so staged to be so fake and over the top. And it's like...
Even Vince's speech was just
yes.
Like, there wasn't a real thing in it.
Like on one of those WWE documentaries, when they ask what the Undertaker means to him and he starts getting teared up and he cuts the camera, that was a great moment for Vince McMahon. Why not have that on actual television? Why not have him get bro? Well, I can't because I'm all man and I'm alpha and blah, 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 blah. No, just if Undertaker means this much to the company, have him and means this much to the fans who are going to be sad to see him go. And your job is to tug on heartstrings. The whole point of professional wrestling and working us is to work our emotions. Let's have that real moment and work our emotions.
Oh, yeah. And there's no realer emotion that Vince is feeling right now than seeing his mortality playing out in front of his eyes and the retirement of Mark Calloway as the Undertaker, a guy who embodies death but also signifies a milestone in both Vince's and Mark's life. And Vince's is closer to the finish. Like, there's a lot of real stuff and real emotions that are playing through Vince, and like, we got none of it.
Yeah, and we got a hologram of Paul Bearer, much like Tupac at Coachella.
And here's the thing I hate about this. If you're going to do it, it's got to be like Return of the Jedi, where they come back with like that kind of fluorescent blue. Like,
I think I tweeted that picture when that happened. I tweeted the Jedi picture. Yeah.
I think that's the only appropriate way to use hologram versions of people.
And I kind of want to see Jedi. I kind of want to see the Undertaker broken up by that. I would have loved to have seen that been a surprise and just have, but I always
loved the Kane and Undertaker stuff with the urn and CM Punk. Even like some of that was kind of tasteless at various points, but like when they got the urn back and they both kind of did the tribute to the urn, that was a powerful moment in Taker's career. There's just this real opportunity to do something more meaningful here, and if you weren't going to do that, or if they weren't going to do that, then they might as well put this earlier in the show. Like, this could have been a good way to kick off the show.
It's like selling out a scene, and I'm going back to my improv roots here, but like, you're watching something that's really dramatic and really has some meat to it, and then somebody sells it out for a joke. Like, somebody farts in the middle of something that's like really, really heartfelt, and you're really watching somebody do some acting work on a comedy stage, and you're like, wow, this is different. And then somebody like just comes in, fart, and then da-da-da-da-da-da. Why? And you're just like, what the? No. No, we had something here. Why did you ruin that with your crappy, stupid joke right there? That's what I... Yeah, I the only graspable moment like that to me right now, as I'm just trying to think of it, the retirement, certain retirements that are unexpected, like Edge and Daniel Bryan. I go back to the Buddy Landell promo about how he wasted his career, and he used that to build up a match with HBK for the Intercontinental title in Smoky Mountain. You have those moments, and they were, Hard Times was a real heart. I mean, you felt the emotion in that after coming back. I just feel something, people. That's all I want. I just want people to feel something.
And it's weird that the Mark Henry fake retirement speech had more heart in it than the real Undertaker retirement speech.
Yeah. which was in character.
Yes.
I just, God, you can do a 30, if you don't want to say anything now, don't, but that was just so, so dumb. I'm sorry. And I know, you know, and especially because you're doing it in front of 20 fans at the Amway Center in Orlando or whatever the hell it's called.
Okay, that's
now.
The best part, right? Them having to react to the fake chanting. Nothing makes this
thank
scene.
Thank you, Taker. Yes. Clap, 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 and being piped in.
And he has to wait for them to die down and everything. I mean, it's been so great.
Oh, if he had just done the motion of, please, everybody be quiet and be seated.
He touches his heart and points out to the fans and mouse thank you to them.
Yes, just you know, hitting the heart and pointing up and all the, yeah, you know, just go full on selling it to me. Because I'll take that. Lie to me, but just make me believe it. That's all I want. That's, you know, any other Survivor Series thoughts? I have none.
I don't know that I'm going to, I don't know that I have any other thoughts. I'm just like scanning real quickly on the card here. Like Asuka and Sasha was good. There's a happy medium between the match that the Street Profits had and with, the New Day and the match the week prior between the Young Bucks and FTR that I think equates to good modern tag team wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only kind of thought about the New Day match. It's like, that left me wanting a little bit because of the WWE style, and the FTR and Young Bucks match left me wanting a little bit because of the sort of like overindulgent indie style. And somewhere between these two styles
is my happy place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because actually it's weird because the Street Profits match was more of an old school tag match than the other one.
Yeah, but it just had a little bit of the WWE stiffness to it. You know what I mean? Like, they have certain beats and stuff that they do that feel very inorganic. But
you know,
yeah,
both
like
teams have to make the hot tag at the same time, and yeah, and
but to your point, like, no, there was like limb and body work and like a lot of old school conventions and things that I like. And it's clear that like Dawkins and Montez Ford, and obviously Kingston and Woods, are like fans of wrestling and fans of wrestling's history and like get those kind of conventions and are trying to incorporate as much of them as they can get away with inside of a WWE match.
All right. So December on the main roster is placeholder before real matches for Rumble. And it feels like that. It feels like all these matches that they're leading up to are let's wait to see, or let's do something that has smoke and mirrors with the TLC gimmicks. The people that are being put up for title shots are sacrificial for the most part, including Braun Strowman, I think, because I think Braun Strowman's eventually going to be put there. But, I mean, you have your Bailey Natty. It looks like they're going to put her in. That's going to be a three-way. It looks like some aspect of the Hurt Business and the New Day for the tag titles, with dissension already starting amongst them. You're probably gonna have Ziggler and Rude on the SmackDown side. You're gonna have Kevin Owens challenging Roman Reigns, and he's sacrificial. You're gonna have Sami Zayn, being fed to somebody probably in some way. And
yeah, it's interesting. The Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan one might actually be the only real title change that happens at that show.
Yeah, but they're playing the Sami Toru Yano thing hard.
Right.
So I know.
Yeah, he might keep Banana Peel winning. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that. Or no, it's actually going to be Big E, I think. I don't think it's going to be Daniel Bryan.
Oh, that is true. And I could totally see Big E. Well, actually, see, I could see Big E beating Sami Zayn.
Yes, I could too. I think that's going to be your one title change, but it's going to be a lot of, you know, you're going to have Carmella and Sasha, you know, which could be better than expected, I think.
Yeah, no, Carmella's like, she's
sneaky
not
good
bad. Yeah, exactly. I won't say
she's great. I will never say that she's a great wrestler, but there were matches in that run with James Ellsworth where she was sneaky better than people gave her credit for.
Yeah, no, she's a good ring presence. I love her so much as a heel. She really is a good heel. I mean, she's actually not a bad babyface either, but like, she's always really found her stride as a heel. And I don't know how I feel about this particular character, but we'll see. Like, if she's made some tweaks to the offensive style, and if her and Sasha are really on the same page, this could get her off on a good foot.
Yeah, and the sneaky best comedy in wrestling right now, at least the past few weeks, is the meta character of Billie Kay being an out-of-work actress in the company that makes movies. I know they don't go hard into that. And the reason why it's weird, because everybody goes, why do people like this so much? I go, because it's good comedy and it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, it doesn't overstay its welcome. And yeah. It's also grounded in a reality that, like, people actually understand, which is the weird, sad desperation of having to get your resume out there on the job market. And, like, the humiliating part of, like, you go on to Indeed and you submit your resume and there's 75 other applicants. And, you know, like, and it's even worse if you ever get involved in acting because you have to have your headshot. And, like, your entire life, everything that you've done in 30 years, 30 spins around the sun is summed up in one photograph of you, usually in black and white, and then like blurbs that are written in bullet point form on the back of your headshot. And
kudos,
like,
to the writer who came up with the line, I have a long history of talking.
No, that was a very funny line.
That killed me. I don't know, it's so perfect in its simplicity. I have a long history of talking, so if you need words, let me know. Anything from the main roster you wanted to bring up?
Let me see if there's anything else on SmackDown that kind of spoke to me. I really liked the Kevin Owens, Jey Uso stuff, the wraparound on SmackDown here. And I thought that it made SmackDown, like, look, obviously these are all placeholder angles. That doesn't mean that these shows have to be unwatchable. And, like, this SmackDown was a very watchable SmackDown.
It was watchable. I am not feeling the Jey Uso part of the angle.
No, here's why. Because it Roman Reigns and Jey Uso has very quickly devolved into Seth Rollins and the Disciple, only instead of like a fake religion, it's like a fake family dynamic.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's the abuse of, because I thought Jey had bought in and I thought he had gotten the rub from Roman at the end of Survivor Series. And then it's like the next night, or the next SmackDown, it's back to you haven't proven yourself to the family yet.
I like Jey's presentation as a killer, and they did a really good job for a while of building him up to true upper mid-card legitimacy. But what is happening now is, like, he's getting a little too overexposed as the attack dog, which actually kind of does this effect of, like, moving him down a little bit. And now
he's,
like,
a flunky more than a killer.
And Roman has cut him down so much that, yes, he's turned him into a flunky. It wouldn't have even been bad if Owens did what he did to Jey Uso, if Roman's disposition towards Jey and the way he viewed Jey was with greater legitimacy. Like, if Roman was aghast that he saw Jey get dismantled because, like, Roman actually believed Jey was going to get the job done, that actually adds to the impact of Kevin Owens attacking Jey Uso. Whereas Roman has really put out in the air that Jey's the F up. And when you put that out there, like, the viewers believe that, and then it sort of makes it expected that people should beat Jey. Whereas if Roman believed that he had infused Jey with a new killer instinct, and we had seen Jey have recent success, we would believe that Jey had a new killer instinct, and it would make Kevin Owens going over the top on Jey and going full fight Owens fight on Jey Uso be that much more impactful.
Yeah, if Roman is Michael Corleone, I want Jey to either be Al Neri or Sonny Corleone. I don't want him to be Fredo.
Right, yeah, and you're definitely Fredoing him up right now in a, yes, way that's completely unneeded.
Yes. Godfather reference for those of you who don't. Some of the younger viewers may not have seen the classic Godfather. I know that's hard to believe, Chris, but, you know, I go with that. But, yeah, I want him to be a competent enforcer for the tribe. I don't want him to be... I don't want him to be the stooge. I don't want him to be the red shirt of the tribe. I want to see some dynamics on this. I want to see some depth to it. I want to see, you know, I want to see where it goes if everybody's I like competent villains. I think competent villains make heroes better heroes, as opposed to, for example, The Miz is, if you read comic books, The Miz is that weird, stupid villain, like, who would be an example of a villain who's has no fan base? I go with like for very expanded Marvel Universe.
The Mad Hatter in Batman.
Yeah, the Trapster in the Fantastic Four. Yeah, in the Flash, maybe the Turtle, as opposed to say Captain Cold. You know, it's one of those things where it's like he's a goofy villain who doesn't get any shine, and it's basically an episode or an issue of the comic because they're trying to come up with a story for later that'll engage the readers, and they just needed a break for that month. Yeah, I want Jey Uso to be Frank Nitti to Al Capone. I want him to be the enforcer. I want him, yeah.
Arn Anderson to Flair. Longer. Like there are missing chapters here up to and including like a real reckoning with Jimmy, yeah. Where Jimmy tries to reason with Jey, and like that should really set off Jey. And like there's just a lot of things that could have been done in the course of this to build up Jey. It feels like we skipped all of those beats at the expense of like kind of greater depth for Roman's character. Roman's now become like it's his character's almost funny now. I don't quite know how to essentialize it, but there's something about it that has went from like being ominous to being kind of goofy.
His logic is so
yes,
it's delusional is what it is. Is he'll go, you know, he'll start off on that angry, you know, intense heel thing, and then just and then he goes into conspiracy theories. This is what it is. It's like, man, if they don't respect you, then you need to speak up. And then it'll be and then the next gear will kick in. It's like, if they don't respect you, they don't respect me. If they don't respect me, they don't respect.
Yeah, and then he starts talking about like his sons and stuff, and you're just like, where is all of this
my
coming
kids,
from?
And
yeah,
they don't respect my kids. They don't respect their football.
I don't care if your kids don't like you, but my kids are gonna like me. I don't want to be a bad dad. You need to get out there.
And there should just be that moment of, what the F are you talking about right now?
It's this weird familial like pyramid scheme where if like one block falls out, it all falls apart.
You know, the domino theory, but with a family. They insulted my wife, and if they insulted my wife, that means they don't think she's pretty enough. And they, you're like, what? Wait, where did
that means we
come?
Can never have good kids. That means yeah. The rest of this bloodline's completely tainted. You have to go out there.
You have to fight for my wife's honor. Wait, why did your wife
the
get into
this? The bloodline's at stake.
let's get NXT UK out of the way. Nothing in terms of angles for me. You liked the Commonwealth Cup, Heritage Cup.
I just, again, think that this kind of falls under SmackDown of like very, yes, it is light, unsubstantial wrestling. I am aware of that. Like these angles are nothing burger angles. WWE storytelling sucks. If you accept all of those premises, often what you are left with, like in the case of SmackDown, is like a really good match between Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan. That's actually a very watchable match. And that's kind of the same way I feel about NXT UK here. Like, for example, Ginny versus Isla Dawn. Nothing to this. I thought Isla Dawn selling at the end of this little squash match with Ginny was really good. She really, like, got across pain. So if you go in setting the bar low in terms of expectations, I think you're rewarded. If you go in going like, this needs to really reinvigorate my youthful love of professional wrestling. Like, nah, dude, NXT ain't doing that. The Heritage Cup, really good match.
But the Heritage Cup means nothing.
It means nothing.
And that's
nothing.
My problem.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I am yes-anding it. I'm saying
yes,
it means
I know
nothing,
you are,
and
Chris,
it was very watchable.
But it just drives me. It's like, and they will be the prestigious winners of the Heritage Cup. Okay, what does that mean? Do they get title shots? Is it a secondary title? What does this mean for a kid other than being the Darren McGavin in A Christmas Story going, it's a major award.
No, the only thing that I wish would have went differently here is if Trent Seven had smashed that damn cup over a kid's head and went heel.
Oh, like Bad News Brown?
Yeah, like that. Like, yeah, let me get the cup. And then he just like slams it into a kid. Because
I don't know. I get your, look, your logic is sound on that. It goes back to my statement a couple weeks ago. I just want someone to root for.
Yeah,
and Trent
no, I
Seven,
see.
Trent Seven is NXT UK Dusty Rhodes. He's somewhat out of shape.
He's in better shape now.
Works great. And is an everyman that guys can get behind. Everybody can get behind. So I am fine with never turning Trent Seven.
No,
even though he's a fantastic heel.
I'm
when
with
he
you.
Works heel.
I'm with you. Like I understand all of that. I think like you end the show with a big angle because it does sort of feel ho hum because we know the Heritage Cup means nothing. That's the other thing is if the tournament means nothing, you're best using the tournament as a forum to start a big angle. And so I would have liked that. Plus, like, I don't know, NXT UK does need a little bit of a shakeup, and Trent going heel would be a good shakeup. Oh, you know the other thing I loved? I loved Alexander Wolf going backstage and meeting with Sid Scala. And Scala goes, okay, and Wolf demands that the coffee boys, in those terms, which is very funny, he's like, the coffee boys need to stay outside, the Gallus boys need to stay outside. And Scala goes, okay, fine, but Imperium can't be ringside either. And Wolf looks like he had never thought about this, that he didn't, like, that this is an outrage.
My request wasn't thought all the way through. Hold on.
How can at first it's like it's what and he's like ah and like he's
it's like going
himself.
In yeah. It's going in and asking for vacation, but they say, hey, if we're gonna give you this vacation at a very busy time, you have to work this holiday. What?
Yeah, it just never even occurred that there was going to be some sort of trade-off. And like, yeah, no, that to be very funny. So like, look, in total, a light show, a very watchable show. I also like, I love this Jordan Devlin character, dude. I think Devlin's just an ace. Like, he's called the Irish ace, but like, he's just got like such attitude and swagger, man. And he has, you know, I'm kind of down on a lot of modern WWE music, but there are some, like, you know, good themes. Devlin's got a good one, especially that intro, dude. Like, where the horns are so, like, the heartbeat, bup, bup. But and then the horns come in and stuff. It just gives him a real aura of a world beater. And I'm legitimately intrigued by the unification thing with the Cruiserweight title, even though I know it's a belt that means absolutely nothing. I'm like stoked for whenever Devlin and El Hijo del Fantasma finally touch Santos Escobar.
They're not going to have that match.
God,
as
I wish
unification.
They would.
I wish they would. I wish they would, but I think it's going to probably end up being Devlin and Swerve when they unify it.
God, I think you're right, but God, I wish they would.
Yeah, I kind of like the two guys with the most star potential in the division. Not that I don't like Shane Strickland, Isaiah Swerve Scott. I just think
you can turn Devlin slight babyface for the context of that match. He's always, whenever they need to turn him slight babyface, especially to fit the dynamics of a match, because of his build, he lends himself very naturally to that. And you want to see this small little like Wolverine just tear the other guy to shreds.
And Phantasma has such a presence, Santos Escobar. I mean, when they were doing that video package on NXT. And showing his entrances and stuff, I go, that dude's money. That guy's so money. And I just want, yeah, those two would be my pick. Let's run through a few AEW things. I thought it was a very good promo week for AEW in terms of Team Taz had a great one. Tully Blanchard, just Tully smiling is always doom for anybody, because when he's happy, you know it's that evil kind of happy. I thought Moxley had a great promo here. And I am happy in tag team terms. I'm happy that the Butcher and the Blade got a win, because they have been eating a lot of losses lately in supporting a lot of guys. And I am here for the Jack Evans TH2 push into a tag team program with the Young Bucks. I love me some Jack Evans. I think even on that contrived talk show on AEW Dark, he cuts a good promo. Give him the mic for a few weeks and let him build this up, even though we're not going to get that, because I think it's going to be December 2nd. I think it's next week is the blow-off, unfortunately. But, it's time to build up old Jack and Angelico again.
Yeah, you didn't mention Sheeta and Anna Jay. I liked that match. I thought that match...
The matches were all good this week.
Yeah, the matches were all good. I liked the angle with Moxley and Kenny Omega. The Kenny Omega character is being done with so much irony and tongue-in-cheekedness that it's taking away from my ability to really believe that this guy can win the title. Like, I don't view this as him being built up as, like, a main event talent. Like, this week, I loved the look that he was sporting until it dawned on me that he was actually... Because I was like, oh, man, he's dressed up like an old-school 80s NWA, almost Ric Flair-style, like, look. And he looked the part of a main event world champion. And then he started talking and went back to the kind of, like, goofy cadence thing that Omega does. And it dawned on me that he's dressing like that almost ironically. And it fits in with the irony of, like, the Omega cleaner dancer girls that are, like, the Nitro girls. And, like, all these other gimmicks. And I like that, like, Moxley clowned on all of that. But... I just want Moxley to have, like, a more normal angle against somebody. Like, I like the Kingston style feuds way more than I like the MJF and Omega style feuds.
Yeah, Omega. I wanted it, it almost feels like he's turned into MJF from the presidential campaign type of thing. There's that hint of self-awareness.
The whole I'm a Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame guy, and we're going to have a wrestling match. And, like, yeah, no, there's a lot of echoes of the MJF stuff. But there's also, to your point, the self-awareness of, like, people say that I don't do wrestling. People say that I do, you know, skits and, like, indie-style stuff, and I'm a Hall of Famer.
I don't mind the name on the marquee says wrestling type of gimmick. And it was just a weird, as opposed to being kind of intense and saying this is going to be a wrestling match and I'm going to hurt you. Oh, it's going to be a wrestling match. Da 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 type of thing. There's an intonation in there it's not connecting me.
Omega doesn't really want to have. I mean, that's part of it. He doesn't really want to have a wrestling match. Like the on-screen character and like Omega himself. But like the on-screen character wants to use the wrestling match as a way of taking away Moxley's best weapon.
Right. And that's fine. Yeah. And that's the whole point. Like, to me, I mean, the second part of that promo where he comes back and talks about Moxley's father, I thought it was a well-intentioned troll. But imagine MJF saying that line versus Omega. And think of the heat it would have gotten.
Well, it would have worked so much better with MJF because the my dad can beat up your dad thing would be way better if MJF says my dad That's could true. Sue your dad into oblivion.
Yeah, because he has that whole Cornette, I come from a rich family type thing.
Whereas, like, Kenny's my dad can beat up your dad thing gets back into that ironic, self-aware, too cute by half, tongue-in-cheek thing that I'm having an issue with.
Okay, and let's do two things. Number one, the Murder Hawk being involved in that last angle with the Death Triangle and Eddie Kingston's group.
Well, you remember the Battle Royal you see,
yes.
Jeff.
Now, is somebody going to come out and even the odds? That's my question. Is somebody going to help Eddie Kingston in this? And who do you think it is?
Someone would have to, wouldn't they? Yes. They need a fourth here. Ooh, who is going to be the new addition to Eddie Kingston's weird little family? I don't know. But yeah, it's a good point because you're going to need to have someone to spin it off with. I thought we were building to Pac versus Eddie Kingston too. So like the insertion of the Murder Hawk does sort of confuse things.
I think there might be a double turn here in some way.
Oh, the Murder Hawk turns on the Death Triangle guys.
Well, no. I was thinking that the Death Triangle guys go heel on the Kingston crew, and then Moxley comes out to help Kingston. But you know, I don't know. I don't.
Really confused. I'm with you, but like it'd be so weird to go like Butcher and Blade are the faces.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And the Death Triangle guys are all the heels.
Well, Butcher, I can see as a mad baby face.
No, you just stand the Butcher like that.
I do.
That is just staunch pro Butcher bias.
Beefy men. That's what I want. Like, that's what I like in my wrestling kids. Yeah, I Yeah, I just think it's going to be a one-off between Kingston and Murderhawk, and then they go back to their respect. I don't think there's an alliance there or anything. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to add a third question. So the second question, which I'm actually adding in now, was it Moxley who beat up Omega?
Oh, you mean, was it Omega who beat up Moxley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I think okay. the whole point of this was that Omega, Moxley thinks that it was a person that Omega hired. Omega never denied it, but Omega didn't do it either. It's just like within the context of this heel character, he likes the idea that like Moxley thinks that he could kick his ass, so he's not one. He's not going to sit out there and deny it either, but he didn't do it. And whoever did it is going to be Moxley's next feud. And this is also sort of the same problem I had with MJF, the MJF feud, which is that they telegraph too clearly where Moxley's going next. And they don't let you really buy into what's going to happen here in this chapter.
And for the final question, since next week is the big winter is coming sort of special event a la NXT doing the Great American Bash on TV. Is there a title change before Moxley goes to Japan?
Where Omega wins?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. I tend to agree. I think he loses this one. I think Omega gets it on the rematch. I don't think he wins it on the first try.
Yeah, no, this character's not winning. It's the same way with MJF. If the question is, can MJF or Kenny Omega be the AEW champion? Duh, yes. It's a presentational thing. Are they being presented in such a way where it makes sense for them to receive the AEW championship and like be the top of the brand person? And in the case of the Omega push, in the case of the MJF push, they were done in a comedy-tinged way that telegraphs, at least to me, with like sort of maybe a more old-school sensibility, but one that I think is just informed from watching a lot of wrestling from the 90s all the way through the 2010s here. They're being presented in such a way that suggests to me that they are a program for the month, but not a title change build right now.
And we end with NXT. So, this kind of continued its descent into main rosterville for me on a lot of fronts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I am mostly against doing a ladder match for control of War Games, because we always know it, unless you're Vince Russo.
And that was a damn good match, too.
Yes.
That was
but you're possibly knocking out a guy, and you're also taking away from the heat of War Games when you do something this brutal on it,
this
in my
opinion. This is such a good match that now that War Games match has to live up to this match. Like, that's the problem. The problem was not this match. This match ruled. It's just like, it's such high stakes for the match you're building to. It's sort of like a, you know, again, going back to the old days, in the old days, you didn't get this type of match. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it makes for a kind of boring week of Saturday evening television. But, like, man, you give away a match like this at the paper, or you don't give it away. You save this sort of thing for the pay-per-view. Like, this is a pay-per-view caliber match here.
Yeah. A night of
Grizzly Young Veterans returned. I was excited about. Oh, man. I loved everything involving Ever-Rise, too. The way, like, the one guy was trying to get back in to save the other guy, and, like, they were.
Oh, for the love of God, put Malcolm Bivens with Ever-Rise already, please.
Yeah. Because
these guys are ready to be your kind of gatekeeper heel tag team, or just gatekeeper team. If there's no good and evil, whatever, I'm fine with Ever-Rise kind of being. I won't go so far as Midnight Express level, but they're that kind of act where they need. I mean, they're good on the stick. If you watch the WWE.com stuff,
they're entertaining, dude. They have personality.
They're great.
Yeah.
Give them a manager and let them go. I mean, just. But I love, you know, the Grizzle Young Vets are always welcome, especially.
Zach Gibson's just such a great, like, present promo. It's. Some people just have a charisma that slices through the television
holds
screen.
The room.
Yeah. And
no
Gibson is that guy. And like Drake's a really good foil. They have a great look. Like, you know, we've moved away from the Drake as the weak link angle, I think, entirely here at this point with the reset. Drake and Gibson are just very much on the same page right now. Yeah, no, dude, like, this was cool.
The Undisputed Era promo was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
The one that was off was the Rhea Ripley one.
Yes. Yes, it sure was. I don't really love anything that's going into the women's War Games match.
Oh, this thing is ice cold, isn't it? Because everything is... All right, let me... It seems like, and don't quote me on this, I didn't ask anybody about this, it seems like they wanted to get Indy Hartwell out of the match, either because the stage was a little bit too big for her experience right now, or she's going to interfere in some ways, and they had to paint themselves out of that corner. And that's the Toni Storm turn makes no sense to me, to be honest with you, because it's just the we've completely screwed up the debuts now, going back to the last takeover of Toni and Ember Moon in so many ways. Not the least of which is we beat Toni Storm against Candice LeRae at one point. It feels, you know, the team having Raquel and why am I blanking?
Dakota.
Dakota, who was the star of the last War Games.
But Raquel has been so like. I like her, and I think we're fans, obviously, but like whenever she's involved in an angle, she is the focus of the angle at this
point. She's
the
foil.
Yeah,
She's the lackey. She's the one who can be beat now, which makes no sense.
But she also gets the most like emphasis too at the same time. Like it she's such a presence that she's distracting from Dakota, and she's distracting from Toni Storm and even the Indy Hartwell or the Candice LeRae component of this.
Yeah, there's no surprise to who the other two members of the babyface team are going to be now, to me. And
it's
I thought
a very
that would
finite
have been interesting.
Universe.
I mean, it's. I thought Io would probably come in at some point, which was fine the way they introduced her into it. But it's obvious now Rhea's going to be the fourth, I think.
I thought there was a chance. It would be very funny is if Xia Li's storyline interrupts this and she beats Rhea Ripley because she has to get a win because of whatever. The Dragon
she
Master.
Interferes in the ladder match on Wednesday, which I don't want to look. I think the ladder match last time knocked out Mia Yim. I don't know if that was the exact plan, but
No, I'm very anti ladder matches prior to takeovers, which is sort of like it should be sort of an obvious non-controversial position, except that they keep happening.
But I thought there was a chance there might be a main roster surprise a la the Kevin Owens, reveal last year. I thought maybe since this run is about pleasing Sasha, maybe Sasha Banks in a War Games match would be interesting to me. But no, it's going to be, you know, God knows if Rhea's ever getting called up because it's like, well, we have to build up Bianca and we have to build up these other stars. We have to build up Lana, so we can't have Rhea on the main roster just yet. Yeah, I just, this feud feels ice cold. It doesn't feel like there's enough heat to it, so I just wouldn't have done the War Games right now. I would have waited. You can pull this out at any time when you have enough feuds going that feel like they warrant a War Games style submit or surrender. But maybe that's just old school me and you know, it's winter, it's time for War Games again.
Yeah, no, like the men's side of it, as we've discussed, totally feels justified. Like there's a lot of longstanding beef with Dunn in the Undisputed Era, and then obviously McAfee in the Undisputed Era. Like it makes sense that they're a team. The women's division has just not been booked in a long form way where they are presently ready for a War Games style of intensity. You can't hotshot it. They might still have a good match, but part of what makes the War Games stuff so good is it's cathartic. And there is going to be no sense of catharsis here. And so, it'll just be a cage match with teams. The Kevin Owens show with Leon Ruff was rough.
I hated it.
It was awful.
And I'm not saying it's because of any of the participants. I didn't like the wink, wink, nudge, nudge everybody knows what's going on type of thing. And then not only that, but you know, it's the basic talk show trope.
Everything was tropes. It, like, so there were tropes, and then there was riffs about how we know this is all tropes.
How we know it's a trope.
How we're still doing it. So there was like a meta commentary about tropes while tropes were still being participated in, and then tropes were being participated in a meta way. But Leon Ruff's character is so flat and so aw shucks, just happy to be here. Believe in your dream, and your dream can succeed if you believe in it, because dreams fly when they take wings of a dove in the sky. Like the most kind of basic, platitudinal, empty
They can't
stuff.
Thread the needle between confidence and low self-esteem to be likable.
And then the other part of it, then he also goes into cringy, almost, will someone be please punch this kid in the face, like over exuberance.
I'm on the Kevin Owens show. Oh,
I kicked Johnny Gargano's ass. I did it last week and I'm going to do it again. Like, come on.
Yeah, we got all the weird baby face thing. We got delusional baby face. We have low self-esteem baby face. Yeah,
he was like half Cameron Grimes. He was like, if Cameron Grimes is the baby face, where you're
I wanted to see him go to the moon.
To the moon.
Yeah, you gotta get your triple threat, and he's gonna get a banana peel win.
Yep,
much like Bianca Belair got a banana peel win against Natty, which you know, here's why I get angry about this, and no. If you give him a competent win, it does so much better than just the, well, we need the loss to protect the guy that we're protecting. I like competency, and nobody ever gets it.
Yeah, and him not winning in competent ways, and like more importantly, being really excited about like fluky wins, it makes him a delusional babyface, and an underdog is not delusional. An underdog is someone who is entirely realistic about the odds, recognizes that they are overwhelming, and is brave because they are not operating and laboring under delusions. They go, I know it's going to be really hard, and the odds are that I'm going to lose, but I fight. That's what I do, and I don't quit.
I'm overachieving right now, and I know I'm overachieving, but you know what? As long as I win... You know what? Let's keep this thing going. Yeah, that's the thing to me. It's like, you can't say after a roll-up win, I kicked Johnny Gargano's ass.
Yeah, like, Johnny Gargano's a punk. They say he's a legend. I beat him twice. I'm great. Like, that is not a babyface.
No.
That's what a heel does.
No, unless it's said in the knowing to his face way. Where you know you're trolling and you know you're being a jerk about it, which you don't want out of your baby face.
And with Ruff's character, it's way too early for any of that. I had no, like last week, I liked the beat where he slapped Damian Priest in the face and was like, take me seriously. Like, that was great.
Yes.
But everything after this has been like, aw shucks, or like, to the moon. And I can't like stop. Just present him as a guy who has a healthy sense of fear and an even greater want to achieve.
And the Tim Thatcher submission loss to Kushida. I like Kushida as a killer, and I'm here for Tim Thatcher versus
Tommaso Ciampa. I even like Ciampa, like trying to make Thatcher does have a problem with Ciampa, and I like Ciampa, going back to what we were talking about with Ruff, I like that Ciampa's basically like calling out Thatcher, like, yeah, you have a problem with me, and I'm gonna make you not be able to ignore that.
Yeah, it's, I liked that. I wouldn't have had Thatcher tap out. I would have had him, you know, count out loss, something.
Yes. I would have had him get really frustrated with the match and like get himself counted out. And then
just leave. He just leaves because he's tired of this. And this is unprofessional.
And then he confronts Ciampa. Ciampa backstage confronts him and does. Because like the implication here, you're trying to get to the point of Ciampa thinks that Thatcher is weak. And so you can have Thatcher exhibit weakness in the ring any number of ways without having him lose. And you can, one of which would be him powdering from the match.
But not about losing a match clean. That's the weird thing is you can have him. You can have him be concerned about winning. I mean, it's
No, this took him down a peg, and it took him down a peg at the thing that he's supposed to be really good
yes.
at. Like,
yeah,
that,
you don't
that,
wanna,
that
you
was
don't
the weirdest
hurt,
thing about it.
You don't want to undermine his strength in doing this. He's a smart, calculated guy. So
Thatcher's like
the
perfect guy you'd pair with Kushida if you were trying to build Kushida to greater credibility because you'd be getting over.
I think
over,
they are. Yeah, I know, think they're trying.
I know, but like you're also cannibalizing Thatcher when
yes.
you. Yeah, yeah, that's my thing.
When you're trying to build a program with Ciampa, so just don't put those two in the ring together. Or, you know, as opposed to the distraction loss or, you know, somebody's music plays and rolls up, have it be a smart thing. Have it, hey, look, he was getting the better of me. I didn't want to take a loss right now. I'm out of here. Don't be the weasel heel. Be the smart, cunning heel.
You could have
and that's
Thatcher,
what Thatcher
just
is.
Get out of the ring and start yelling at Ciampa and just like basically act like he doesn't care about the match anymore because he's so annoyed by Ciampa. And like, like when he gets counted out, he just like sort of like waves it off. Like he doesn't even care. He's focused on the scrum with Ciampa here. I'm with you. I thought that this was kind of a baffling way of having Thatcher lose here.
I'll ask one silly question at the end of all this. Are we going to see the woman under the hood in the Xia Li promos? Is that going to be a reveal or no?
I think yes, and I also think that we're going to see whoever the other person is in the Gargano SUV. And
I think that's still Austin Theory.
I think that, yeah, no, I called that was Austin Theory a couple of months ago, and I think
yeah,
that, yeah
I think we
yeah.
yeah we both had yeah. that, and we both had there's always a second ghost mask.
Yes, yeah, yeah, that's also true. There's always a second. Yeah, right.
Xia Li, dare I say, maybe we can make a Satomura. Maybe I don't know. You know I know like, that's a weird thing to put all Asian women, even though they're not of the same.
Yeah. Especially. But, like, everything about this angle is so weird.
The return of Kairi Sane.
It would be very funny if it was, like...
That would kill me if it was Kairi Sane.
This angle is just so strange. It's very out of left field.
But it's... Dare I say, it's applicable to the level that Xia Li and Boa are at.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean...
There is always this kind of goofiness in mid-card wrestling where you have these weird supernatural angles and, you know, from Bobby Heenan looking for the missing link in a cave to, you know, those, you know, Akeem the African Dream being the reveal of that from One Man Gang type of thing. It's at the appropriate level for this kind of stupidity. As long as this isn't on the main event level, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and hopefully it gets Xia Li some more confidence doing promos and
yes.
some of the other things that she's lacking for what WWE wants out of her. Because I think that there is a lot. I like Boa, too. I think both these people have in-ring talents that are really usable. Like, Boa's got, like, a really interesting look. And, like, I like all the kicking and striking. And with a guy his height, it looks really good.
Well, they're doing matches that aren't their style. They're doing...
Yeah.
indie-rific type of choreography when they should just be doing kick, punch, beat a guy down, and pin him.
Yeah, no, I want to see WWE be a space for work styles, you know, like, you know, what we were talking about with Kyle O'Reilly, but like a guy like Arturo Huas, I just needs a little more, they need a little more fluidity. And one thing that is kind of a positive in WWE in-ring style this year is like, with like Timothy Thatcher and even like Matt Riddle and other people, the realm of the Overton window of what is acceptable in ring style in WWE has expanded a little bit more. It's not as rote as it was, let's say, 7 or 8 years ago.
I just thought of something. I'll end with this because I think this is another possibility in the women's war games. I think we might get another possibility of one of these women, quote unquote, being injured or taken out beforehand. I think we might get a reintroduction of Mercedes Martinez.
Oh, here. Yeah. She would make sense as the fourth.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind that at all. You know, you can even do the respect thing with Rhea over their cage match beforehand and do it that way. That wouldn't be too bad. But yeah, we will see next week. It's going to be Shotzi Blackheart against Raquel Gonzalez. I believe in a ladder match. Okay.
She might be on the team too, because they love her. They, at least for all the promotional stuff.
Oh no, Shotzi's on the team.
It's oh yeah, that's
Shotzi.
Right. Yeah, yeah. She might be on it too. You know. So there you go. Prediction confirmed.
But that's gonna do it for us. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. No sponsors this week to thank, but we do thank our sponsors at all times.
But we kept it real this week, and let's thank the listeners and the supporters of Shake Them Ropes. It's a thankful week, Jeff.
It is. I do not trust me. Anybody who listens to this at this point, very happy you've stuck with us.
Except for Cody. You know, Cody, I could take or leave.
Trisha.
Yeah, I could take or leave her too.
Mm-hmm.
But
like
especially
to thank
Cody.
The cats in our audience, we'd like to thank
them.
Oh, the
cats are great. I love the cats. Sure.
But yes, thank you for spending part of your holiday weekend with us. Chris is now on the smoke a cigarette after the portion of politics for Don't Worry About the Government. He'll tell you about it.
Yeah, and we're cruising into the holiday break here. So like usually what happens in December is I get basically everyone who's associated with the show and we get them in and kind of do a year-end check-in. So if you're interested in kind of the year-end check-in conversations, you'll be able to hear those all throughout the month here of December. Obviously a lot to talk about in each one of those, so those will be fun. Go and check those out at don'tworry.tv on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. There's a video version of the show that you can watch if you support the show over at patreon.com/DWATG. That's fine. No, that's fine. That's fine.